Welcome to Shiur and Svarno, Parshas Shoftim. The Svarno had told us at the beginning of Parshas Shoftim that there are various different topics which are going to be discussed in Parshas Shoftim, and they all focus on issues having to do with leadership. The first part of Parshas Shoftim deals with laws pertaining to the Shoftim, to the Dayanim, to the judges. And then as we move into Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalet, we find that the Torah talks about the notion of a melech, of a king. Kisava el ha'aretz asher Hashem alokecha nosein lach, when you come into the land that Hashem is giving to you, v'yomarto osimu alai melech kechol ha'goyim asher svivosoi. You'll say, I want to place upon myself a king just like all of the nations around me. Som tosim alecha melech. You should place a king upon you. Asher yivcha Hashem alokecha bo. A king whom Hashem chooses. You should place a king upon you who's from your brethren. You're not able to put upon yourself a foreigner who's not your brother. And the Torah goes on to describe all of the halachas that pertain to the king. The Torah's attitude towards monarchy is a topic of tremendous, tremendous discussion. On the one hand, you have the story in Shmuel, where the people approach Shmuel Hanavi, and they ask him for a king, that they should have a king, and Shmuel Hanavi reacts extremely negatively. He tells them all of the terrible things which a king is going to do in his interaction with Klal Yisrael. Certainly, if you read that story in isolation, the impression that you would get is that the Torah, Judaism, is very, very much opposed to the idea of a monarchy. And however, on the other hand, the parsha which we just read briefly from the Chumash, from Parsha Shoftim, seems a little bit ambiguous. On the one hand, it describes that it's Klal Yisrael who are initiating the request for a king, and the request for a king is couched in somewhat negative language. Let me place upon myself a king just like all of the nations. The impression you get is that's not such a good thing. But in response, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, good idea. Place a king upon yourself. And we may know that the Rambam counts this as a mitzvah saseh. It's one of the Taryag mitzvahs in the Torah, that we have a mitzvah to appoint a king. So I don't get it. So is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it sometimes a good thing? What's going on over here? What's the Torah's attitude towards this whole idea of a monarchy? So much has been written on this issue. The Svarno has a very unique approach. The Svarno writes as follows. When the people come, and as described in the Chumash, they say, Osimo alai melech kechol ha'goyim. We'd like to appoint a king like all of the other nations. What does that mean? Shetiyeh hamalchus lo ulazara. Kechol hagoyim, a king like all of the other nations, means a king whose position is passed on from father to son. That's the notion of monarchy, which is, according to the Svarno, a non-Jewish notion of monarchy. The people come and they say, we want a monarchy which is going to be hereditary. Lo ke'inyan hashoftim, shahoya hashofit molech hu bilvad, avolo zaro acharov. And this stands in contrast, says the Svarno, to the shoftim, the judges. There were numerous judges who judged the Jewish people before Shmuel Hanavi agreed to the request for a king. But each shofet ruled the Jewish people, and then when they were done, they faded into the background, and someone else was chosen to be the next shofet. There wasn't a passing of the baton from father to son. V'al minui shofet lemelech bozeh ha'ofen, nitztavu b'v'yasam la'aretz. The command that was given to Klal Yisrael when they would come into Eretz Yisrael was indeed to have a melech, but a melech in the sense that a shofet is a melech. Right? We know Chazal, by the way, used the term melech to describe a leader whose position is not necessarily a hereditary one. Vahivi shurun melech b'saseif rosh hayom. So according to one interpretation, vahivi shurun melech means that Moshe Rabbeinu was a melech in Klal Yisrael. So if indeed Moshe Rabbeinu was described as a melech, he's a melech who did not pass on the position to his sons. The sons of Moshe Rabbeinu don't really occupy much position at all. They kind of fade from the, if they were on the scene to begin with, they certainly fade from the scene afterwards. When Moshe Rabbeinu comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parshas Pinchas and says, V'lo siya adas Hashem katzon asher ein lohem roeh, let not the congregation of Hashem be like sheep who lack a shepherd. In other words, Yifkar Hashem elokei aruchos isha lo'eda. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu appoint someone who's going to lead Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. According to the Sfarno, he's asking for a melech. But a melech doesn't mean someone who's a king in the typical sense in which we use that term, where it's dynastic, where it's passed down from father to son. Melech simply leads a leader. There has to be a leader. There's a mitzvah to make a leader. But the notion that that monarchy is then passed down from father to son, that's not automatic. The original, the pristine idea, according to the Sfarno, of monarchy is that it should be not necessarily dynastic. Omnam shiyiyya hamelech kemalchei agoyim. The notion that the king should be like a king, like all the other nations, that is to say, machzik b'malchus hu v'zaro, that he's holding on to the position in a hereditary fashion, that it's dynastic, nimos eitzel hakel yisborach, very strong terminology. That's disgusting. It's despicable in the eyes of Hashem. Yeah.
So then, how does Sforno reconcile Rabbah from Yaakov to Yehuda?
Right, well, Yasser Shevet mi Yehuda, right, right.
He's supposed to be the king.
Right, so excellent question. Let's see a little bit more in the Sforno, and then we'll try to, you know, put all of this together. I mean, Lamaisa, we know that David was picked to be the king in a dynastic sense. You know, David Lazaro Adolam, right? In other words, you know, so that, where does that fit into the Sfarno's conception? So he writes this. Right, right, right. So Shaul doesn't establish a dynasty, but David does. And David's dynasty is considered to be a pretty important dynasty. I mean, Moshiach. Right, Chai V'Kayim, right, as Moshiach. Okay, but in Kol Zeh, the dynasty of David HaMelech, we recognize as having incredible validity. So where does that fit into things? So, okay, yeah, so let one thing at a time. Let's do one thing at a time. Avot Siva, so really, fundamentally, Hashem doesn't want a monarchy which is dynastic. Avot Siva, however, in our parsha, he commands as follows: Shekasher yakshu arpam lahamid lohem melech b'zeh ha'ofen. When the Jewish people stiffen their necks to appoint a king who will be a dynastic king, in other words, that will be passed down from father to son, lo yivcharu ela adam kosher sheyivchar bo Hashem. If they're going to pick a dynastic king, then they have to pick a person who's worthy of the position, who's chosen by Hashem, v'lo yavir Yisrael al dos, someone who's not going to cause the Jewish people to sin, v'shelo yiya ish nachri, afal pishiya odom kosher, he shouldn't be a foreigner, even if fundamentally speaking, he's a good guy, v'afal pishiya gibor v'ish melchama, and that's even if he's a warrior and a mighty person, but if he's not from, you know, from the Jewish stock, you know, if, again, going, he has to be as Jewish, but in other words, if he doesn't stem from Jews on his father's side, you know, so then he's disqualified from being the Melech. So in other words, again, and we'll see a little bit more of this in the Sforno, but just to summarize where we are right now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu fundamentally wants leaders, kings, who are not dynastic, like the Shoftim. That's the ideal model, according to the Sforno. Our Pasuk anticipates that when you're going to come into Eretz Yisrael and say, I want a dynastic monarchy, Asima alai melech kechol agoyim asher svivosai, I want a king where the position is passed down from father to son. Why would you want that? It's easier. It's easier. It's easier to pick, you know, once the father passes away. It's easier to figure out who's going to be the next king. You know, you don't have a lot of infighting after that. Okay, so I'd like to have that. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, reluctantly agrees to that. Sam tosim alecha melech. You can appoint a king in such a fashion. Indeed, it's appropriate to appoint a king in such a fashion. However, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, You have to follow certain conditions. I have to pick the person. I have to agree to the person. Shayivcha Hashem Elokecha bo. And he can't come from non-Jewish stock, etc., etc., etc.
Why does he have to have that? You can't pick the question. Because Rambam told us that we're
choosing. Because Rambam told us tells us that we can choose. Mm-hmm. So what do I have to say should be enough? So it could be like this. In other words, when he says, Lo yivcharu el adam kasha sheyivchar bo Hashem. So we know in the case of David HaMelech, there was an actual anointment by a Navi. But maybe in theory, it didn't have to be like that. Maybe if they found a person who was kosher, that would be an indication that he's someone who Hashem chose. So you say, okay, so if he's kosher, so we can find an Ish Nachri. No, okay, that's a limitation. In other words, even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to reveal who the king is going to be, as he did with David HaMelech, nonetheless, Klal Yisrael are, you know, they have to go out and find an Ish kosher, but they can't find, you know, a person who's an Ish Nachri. Maybe that's what he means. That would answer the question. I'm not sure that's what he means, but maybe that's what he means. V'kashu chatu b'sheilas ha-melech she'im lochu v'zarek u'chol ha-goyim. Now continues the Sfarim, says as follows. So when Klal Yisrael sinned in the days of Shmuel Anovi, and they asked for a king who would be a dynastic king, just like the rest of the nations have it, Hoya ha'ona shalem b'takonos b'takolos ha'koros le'homon b'shvil ha-melech. The Jewish people were punished because of that request, and various terrible things happened to the Jewish people on account of the fact that they now had a king. They had a king who was a typical type of king. Ka'omro za'aktem b'yom ahum lefnei malkechem asher b'chartem lochem v'lo yane Hashem eschem b'yom ahu. The Pasuk in Shmuel Anovi says to the Jewish people, you know, there's going to come a day where you're going to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of the king whom you picked, and Hashem's not going to answer you. He's going to say, so to speak, told you so. Told you shouldn't have picked a king like that. Ucha Omro, as the Pasuk says in Hosea, Eten l'cha melech ba'api v'ekach be'evrasi. I'll give you a king, but I'll give you that king ba'api, in anger, with reluctance. I'm not happy with the idea of your having a king, and the day will come where I'll be so fed up with the king that I'm going to take him away from you, says the Pasuk. Then he goes on to say the following, really, really quite striking analogy. You want to see an analogy in Chumash to the idea of what it means to pick a king? The best analogy to the mitzvah of appointing a king in this fashion, a dynastic king, is the mitzvah of Eishes Yifas Torah. We're going to read about the Eishes Yifas Torah in the beginning of next week's Sedra. The Jews go out to war. A Jewish man sees a beautiful non-Jewish woman. Under certain circumstances, he's able to enter into a relationship with her. So, as Chazal express, it's permissible, but lo dibra Torah ela kenegad yetzer hara. The Torah allowed the instigating and following through of the relationship with the Eishes Yifas Torah, but reluctantly. It realized that it was a concession to human nature. If you don't allow Eishes Yifas Torah, the person is going to end up, you know, doing things which are much worse. So, in other words, the Torah will, you know, to borrow the phrase that the Gemara uses, you know, better that you have, given to the Yetzer Hara in a kosher way, rather in a way which is totally not kosher. But it's a concession. It's a concession to human frailty. Says the Svara, that's exactly the same thing as Minoy HaMelech, is appointing a king. The Minoy HaMelech, the appointing of a king, is also a concession to human frailty. And, you know, it acknowledges the fact that people want to have this dynastic kind of kingship. And he says, we find with an Eishes Yifas Torah, Asher Romaz Shesofo Lisnosa. Chazal, or the Torah, hints at the fact that ultimately when the man marries the Eishes Yifas Torah, he's going to end up hating her. Olaholid Mimeno Ben Sora Romore. As Chazal, Rashi brings the beginning Parshas Kiseitse, ultimately, who's going to be the product of this Jewish man and the Eishes Yifas Torah? Very likely a Ben Sora Romore, a kid who rebels against his parents, Kamo Shekar Avram B'dvar Avshalom. That's indeed what happened, according to Chazal, with David HaMelech and Avshalom, that Avshalom ends up you know, rebelling against David HaMelech. So, you know, the allowance of a king is very much a bidyeved, something which is not the ideal, you know, from the Sfarno's point of view. Interesting. Definitely an interesting perspective. But we come back to the example of the Malchus based David, and we wonder how exactly that fits into this idea that the Sfarno is presenting. So in other words, in an ideal world, there wouldn't have been a Malchus based David. In other words, had Klal Yisrael never gone to Shmuel, it was wrong that Klal Yisrael went to Shmuel and asked for a king, according to the Sfarno. Good. So if they wouldn't have gone to Shmuel HaNavi and asked for a king, so there never would have been a Malchus based David, and what would have been the trajectory of Jewish history? It would have been Shoftim all the way down the line, and it would have been Melech HaMoshiach as the equivalent of a Shofet? Is that how things would have turned out? So the truth is, perhaps the answer to that question, according to the Sfarno, is yes. In other words, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu certainly saw that David was an extraordinary person. He was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that you and your children are going to have a dynasty, but that was only in response to the fact that Klal Yisrael wanted to have a dynasty to begin with. I mean, the truth is, if you look at the descendants of David HaMelech, they didn't all turn out so wonderfully. They turned out better than other dynasties who ruled over Klal Yisrael, but they didn't, you know, not everyone who was a descendant of David HaMelech was necessarily as exemplary as David HaMelech himself was. Perhaps in a, again, it's an alternate universe, but perhaps in an alternate universe, Kadosh Baruch Hu would have picked David to be a melech in the sense of a shofet, and then his successor would have been similarly someone picked by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe it would have been Shlomo HaMelech, who certainly was an exemplary king up until certain things that he did. But maybe Rechavam wouldn't have necessarily taken over after Shlomo. In other words, maybe in every generation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have picked the right person, and there'd still be a concept of Melech HaMashiach. Remember, the Sfarno doesn't reject the idea of Melachim, he just redefines what it means to be a Melech. A Melech means to be a Jewish leader, but the notion that a Melech automatically has to pass on the Malchus to his son, to be his successor, wasn't necessarily part of the original deal. So there'd always be a mitzvah to have a Melech. You need a leader, in that sense of the term, but the notion that the leadership would pass from father to son wasn't necessarily automatic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised it to David HaMelech as a special reward to David HaMelech, but in the following way. Look, the Klal Yisrael already asked for a dynasty. They asked for a dynasty. Had they not asked for a dynasty, maybe there wouldn't have been a dynasty. But now that they asked for a dynasty, David HaMelech, you're certainly such an incredible person that if anyone deserves to have a dynasty, it should be you. Right, but in an alternative universe, so maybe it wouldn't have been necessarily something dynastic passed on from David to his children. What about the promise that Yaakov Avinu made to Yehuda, Lo Yosir Shevet Mi Yehuda? So the truth is, even that doesn't necessarily indicate that there would be a dynasty. In other words, whoever the Melech is going to come from Yehuda. But Melech A need not necessarily be related to Melech B. They're just from the same Shevet. Okay, theoretically that maybe was the promise that was given by Yaakov Avinu to Yehuda. It's not going to necessarily be father to son. It's just, you should know, the Shevet Yehuda is going to be extraordinary, that they're going to produce tremendous Jewish leaders. But, you know, who says that it has to be a dynasty, well, you know, father to son? They'll go from one to another. Alternatively, you know, Yaakov Avinu is predicting what's going to happen. You know, it's the Chiddush of the Ramban, the famous Ramban who writes on Lo Yosir Shevet Mi Yehuda, that, you know, to go against what Yaakov Avinu said, Lo Yosir Shevet Mi Yehuda, is a terrible crime, and that's why the Chashmonaim were punished. But it's possible to read what Yaakov Avinu tells Yehuda simply as a prediction, not as a commandment, namely, there'll come a time where Klal Yisrael will choose a dynasty. So guess what? You know, I'm just letting you know, FYI, the dynasty is going to come from you, from Shevet Yehuda. That's the dynasty that's going to be picked and that ultimately is going to rule over Klal Yisrael. But it's not necessarily, you know, endorsing the idea of a dynasty. It's just predicting what's going to happen. So I think those are two possible ways. Again, we don't know from the Svarno how he deals with that pasuk, but those are two possible ways that he might reconcile his idea that the ideal malchus is not something which is passed from father to son with that pasuk lo yaser shevet miyehuta. In any case, it's a very, very interesting take on the notion of what the ideal malchus would have been like. I'm not sure that it really has any practical implications, because in other words, once Klal Yisrael asked for the idea of a dynastic malchus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, fine, you'll get a dynastic malchus, and the dynasty in particular is going to come from David HaMelech, right? And that was a promise Hashem made to David HaMelech. So once that's in place, we're not turning back the clock, but in theory, you know, history could have turned out differently according to the Svarno in a sort of alternate universe, and according to the Svarno, that might have been the better way of doing things had Klal Yisrael not been so insistent on asking for a dynasty. So the real role of the Kohanim is to be the Rebbeim of Klal Yisrael.
Also right.
Okay, no, but that's spiritual leadership as opposed to political leadership. In other words, the Melech was the political leader. The Kohen was the teacher. Kisiv Se Kohen Yishmeru Das V'Sari Yevakshem Mipiyu. That was really his role. You know, he wasn't making decisions about we should go to war, we should impose taxes, you know, we should, yes Iran deal, no Iran deal. You know, that wasn't the Kohen that was dealing with those sort of things. That would have been the Melech, whoever the Melech was. It's interesting that Kohanim are clearly dynastic, right? In other words, why that's l'chatchila. I mean, that you can't argue on. Why would the Torah set up that the Rebbeim of Klal Yisrael be, you know, something that's passed from father to son? So, I perhaps one can suggest as follows, and this, you know, picks up on an idea that you see in Achronim in a certain context. Till modern times, and the idea of a yeshiva and, you know, leaving your family to go learn by a rebbe, you mostly absorbed your Torah from the environment in which you grew up in. Certainly that was true in the time of Bayis Rishon, right? Remember, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that it was Yeshua ben Gamla who instituted the whole idea of a school system. Up until that time, your father taught you Torah. So in other words, your ability in teaching Torah really was something you got from the home. You know, your ability in leadership wasn't necessarily something you got from the home. You could have a talented leader who has a son who doesn't know what he's doing, and vice versa, right? But in terms of Torah knowledge, so you really got your Torah knowledge from the home. So in other words, the Rebbe was much more likely to produce other Rebbeim of the next generation from his own household. You know, again, nowadays it's totally different because we have a school system and you go to school and they tell you everything you learned at home is wrong. You know, but, okay, but, you know, once upon a time, you know, the Shalshelis HaMesara, you know, was passed from father to son. That's really the ideal. You know, Shinantam Livonecha, right? You're really supposed to give it over to your child directly. That's really the ideal. What's that? Right. With Avraham and Yitzchak. Of course, you realize that Vayelchu Shneim Yachdav, you know, was with the intention of the father slaughtering the son. So just to put things in context a little bit, but after the fact, they were going together. Okay, let's see a little bit further. We'll start. The following, and then we'll have to talk about this in greater depth, Be'ezus Hashem, tomorrow. In Perek Yud Ches, starting with Pasuk Yedalud, we read about Nevi'im who will come in a future time, and how we should trust them to say the right thing. Ki agoyim ha'ela asher ato yorei shosom el ma'oninim v'yalkosmim yishma'u. Right, when the nations that you're coming into Eretz Yisrael, They listen to all kinds of fortune tellers, soothsayers. Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving you something different. Not soothsayers, not fortune tellers. What is he giving you? Navi mikir b'cha mi'achecha kamonu, yakim l'cha Hashem elokecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send you Nevi'im. And Nevi'im who are like Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll explain what that means in just a minute. We know that the Nevu'ah of Moshe Rabbeinu is unique, right? That's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrei Amunah, one of the 13 principles of faith. So what does it mean that he's going to be, that we're going to send, Hashem is going to send you Nevi'im kamoni? Moshe Rabbeinu says that that Hashem is going to send Nevi'im just like me. Elov Tishmon. You should listen to what that Navi has to say. On this comments the Svarno as follows. Elov Tishmon. Im Yitzave Mitzvas Sha'a. Should the Navi command you to observe a mitzvah, which is a temporary mitzvah, even if that mitzvah involves setting aside what ordinarily would be a Torah principle. Right? So to take the classic example of this, we know that Eliyahu HaNavi tells the Jewish people that he's going to offer up a karbon on Har HaKarmel, even though it's after the Beis HaMikdash has been built, and one at that point is not allowed to offer up Shkutei Chutz, you're not allowed to offer up karbonos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So here, and again, the Ramban elaborates on this to a greater extent than the Svarno does. Here, the way to read the pasuk is as follows: Navi mikir b'cha mi'achecha kamoni, yakim l'cha Hashem elokecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send you Nevi'im who are just like Moshe Rabbeinu. What do you mean, just like Moshe Rabbeinu? Kamoni. They're not just like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had a kind of nevuah that was unique. Again, that's what we said. It's one of the 13 principles of faith. We don't believe any no one's nevuah is ever comparable to Moshe Rabbeinu. So these Nevi'im are comparable to Moshe Rabbeinu insofar as, at least in certain cases, they can tell you new halachas. Now, everything Moshe Rabbeinu told us was a new halacha, right? Every once in a while, a Navi will come along and he has the authority, in limited circumstances, to tell us new halachas as well. Eliyahu HaNavi can come along and tell us that under these circumstances, we're allowed to offer up karbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. That's kamoni. Kamoni, he has the same legislative power, to an extent, as Moshe Rabbeinu. And Elov Tishma'un, listen to him, to that Navi, to Eliyahu, even though he's telling you to do something which under normal circumstances would be a violation of Torah. Now, the question we have to treat tomorrow is, okay, so when do we know that it's Eliyahu HaNavi, you know, who has HaKadosh Baruch Hu's backing, and when do we know that it's, you know, Mr. Right. How do I know that it's not Mr. I got my Nevuah degree in the Cheerios box, you know, and clearly, Elov Lo Tishmo, now we're not supposed to listen to that guy. How do you figure out, you know, when he's telling you something legit, even though it's against Torah under normal circumstances, and how do you understand when he's just a charlatan? So Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up with that tomorrow. Rav Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rav Tzadok HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos